This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright.
Loved it.
And Brock Rom.
You're right on it.
From kids to sports and living coast to coast, photographer Zach Tarrant has captured life for a living. We learn about his art school background, how he's able to capture authentic athlete images, and the art of making a good frame.
And we're all going to clap on 38.
Okay. This is exciting. The anticipation is building.
I'll take it. Might be the first like four-way clap we've had.
Brock, I screwed it up.
Oh, boy.
I really stepped in it.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Excited to be joined today by Zach Tarrant. Zach is the manager of photography and the team photographer for the Houston Texans. Zach, thanks for coming on with us.
Appreciate it, Brock. Nice to be here.
Zach, I wanted to have you on for two reasons. First of all, I truly believe this. I think you're one of, if not the best photographer in the NFL. I think you do fantastic work. I've known you since you interned at the Chiefs. You did great work there. So it's great to see you doing work, great work with the Texans. But most importantly, CM Punk is back.
Let's go.
Adam Cole.
Let's go.
Daniel Bryan. Bryan Danielson. Is WWE in trouble? Is AEW on top now? Is now the best time to be a wrestling fan? Because it's kind of feeling like it is.
It's a great time to be a wrestling fan. It's an embarrassment of riches from a wrestling fan perspective. I'm having a blast. If you're not locked in, tune back in. Check it out. AEW is a very fun show. I went to my first live AEW show here in Houston a few weeks ago. Had a blast. They're doing a great job. I wouldn't go as far to say that WWE's in trouble because they have more money than God, so they can roll on for a little while at least. But, competition is great for the consumer, and as a consumer, I'm thoroughly enjoying myself right now.
Garrett and Justin's the look on their faces when we started this. They had no idea that I was going to hijack this opening segment into wrestling. But I mean, it's a good time. It's a good time
when
to be a wrestling
fan. You
have
a shot, you got to do it.
You got to talk wrestling. You absolutely got to do it.
Yeah.
I'm not opposed. I don't follow it anymore. But man, did I love wrestling back in the heyday of the Attitude Era and the WCW, WWE.
There has never been a better time. There's never been a better time than right now to get back into wrestling. There's actual competition, and competition breeds innovation, right?
Amen to that.
I second that.
I bring that up because sometimes in your spare time, you do photograph professional wrestling, yeah. which those photos are great. But I do want to talk about your photography career, obviously. I follow you on Instagram. I see a lot of your work. But why don't you just take us through your career in the industry, where you got started and how you got to be the manager of photography and the team photographer for the Texans?
Okay, cool. I appreciate it, man. I appreciate the kind words earlier. I respectfully disagree that I'm one of the best, but I'm having a great time and I'm having an opportunity to do the thing that I really enjoy that doesn't feel like work. So I feel pretty lucky about that. So just kind of running you through the journey, the ZT journey. Back in high school, I really wasn't exposed to much visual art. There wasn't a lot of it at my high school. I was a musician. I played the drums. That was kind of my elective/extracurricular activity. So never really went the visual, art route. I really appreciated film. And that was kind of the biggest thing that I was concerned with in terms of visual art. Went to Oklahoma State thinking I was going to be a writer, had a very outdated, old-timey vision of what being a journalist would be. I don't know what exactly I thought that was, but I think it involved something like a press pass and then some sort of old-timey type of a hat. Quickly found out that especially In 2004, 2005 was a job that was disappearing and kind of wasn't a real job, and sort of came to find out I didn't like writing like that. Wasn't for me, it wasn't working, and that was okay. I think a lot of people have that experience where you get to school and you sort of realize like, oh man, I have no idea what I'm talking about. I have no clue what I want to do. But what I was doing that I really enjoyed was working at the school newspaper. It's called the Daily O'Collegian at Oklahoma State. I was working there. I loved being in the newsroom. They needed a photographer, and I raised my hand. I sort of had a passing interest, had a camera, had a little body of work together. And I'll tell you what, the fact that they hired me to do that job tells me that they would have hired literally anyone, because I had no clue what I was doing. I don't think I had even used a real DSLR camera at that point when they gave me that job. I think I was only shooting film still. So I was really learning from scratch at that newspaper job. It was cool. What I really locked into immediately was I found myself in all these places I didn't belong because of this camera and this job. It's sort of like this really bizarre little portal into just random stuff around Stillwater. I liked that I was sort of, you know, here's your gear, get in your car, go to the place at this time, do the thing. Turn in your work. Either you did it, thumbs up, or you didn't do it, thumbs down. I really liked the simple parameters of that job and that gig. And it was kind of one of those things like, I need more of this. I was shooting football at Oklahoma State. Loved that. And just kind of realized I needed to go somewhere that I could really do photography in earnest. So I transferred to Savannah College of Art and Design in Savannah, Georgia. Got a BFA in photography. Did really well there. Really locked in. Really enjoyed it. One of my favorite things about SCAD was their faculty was like unbelievable. He had great resources, great equipment, but all of the like weird random friends that you made at this art school that are making other cool things. So you are absorbing this really interesting secondary education from your friends that you're making at SCAD, right? Like your buddy's making a movie. Oh man, I'm going to dress up like a zombie and be in the zombie movie. Oh, your buddy, your roommate is a painter. You get to see what that's all about, right? Mixing paints, all that kind of interesting stuff. So I really got a lot out of that aspect of being in art school. Graduated, didn't know what to do. A lot of friends went to New York. I was like, oh, I guess that's what you're supposed to do. I'm going to go to New York. It was like a bad Disney movie, man. Like just in the train station, lost, massive iMac box in one hand, big crappy duffel bag over the back. Just sort of freaking out, trying to make my way to Jersey City to get to the sublet that I had found on Craigslist. Just a real disaster. I was interning for a guy named Joel Meyerowitz on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. He's kind of one of these guys you learn about in photo history class. Really liked his work. Thought he was the man, is the man, still think he's the man. And that just seemed like I was lucky to get that opportunity. Learned a lot there. Just to be in a real professional artist, professional photographer's studio, absorbing everything he has to say, seeing what that looks like. It was a real eye-opener. It sort of like broadened my perspective on everything. But just kind of realized I didn't want to be in New York. Went out to Marfa, Texas. Interned at Ballroom Marfa. It's a small art gallery there. Loved that.
Two very different
yeah. places. Marfa agreed with me much more. That's a lot more my speed. You know, if you're somebody that needs Starbucks and Target, Marfa is not the place for you. But if you want to have like literally nobody else on the road when you walk or drive to work, Marfa is the place for you. I just felt like I got to know the town within a couple of days. It was crazy. I'd never experienced that sense of community before. But there's nothing else to do other than hang out with each other. That's what everybody was doing. And there was this sort of class of interns at a few different institutions simultaneously. So you make your little intern friend group. And man, that was, I was with my now wife at the time. And by the time that internship was over, she was like, you know, maybe you're done being in the middle of nowhere. I was like, okay, that's fair. But if I'd been flying solo, man, I might still be there. I don't know what I would have been doing, maybe washing dishes or something, but I didn't have any inclination to leave outside of my relationship. Worked at a small photo studio in Alabama for a couple of years while my wife finished up school. Wasn't glamorous, wasn't cool, doesn't even make it to the resume anymore these days, but I got a lot of reps in. I was shooting all day, every day. I was doing school picture day, man. I was shooting, you know, 400 kids before lunchtime.
Hold on a second. I have young kids that I really struggle taking pictures of. It's like anytime I pull the camera out, they run the other way or make faces.
Yeah.
Do you have any tips for how to approach that?
Maybe distract them. Some kids, the more you try to control it and pose them and adjust and do this, the worse it gets. So some kids, it's like, just do less. And if you can tell that it's that kind of kid, just be quick on the trigger, you know, and just really be watching. Because when that moment happens, like, you better get it right then. Because if you got to adjust, you know, sometimes you just make it worse. Sometimes you have to, like, be like, okay, start over, stand up, shake it out, like, try again, sit back down. Okay, let's take the picture. So, yeah, man, it was not glamorous. It was not cool. But it was valuable experience, you know, just very utilitarian. Get the exposure right. Get the color right, you know. If you screw that stuff up, we're not going to make any money, right? We're trying to sell these pictures, so you got to get all that stuff right. So, yeah, and I was shooting sports then too, you know, so yearbooks would hire this studio, you know, cover all of our athletic events for the yearbook. So I was getting to shoot all kinds of stuff. And I actually, you know, I sort of realized, like, I've tried all these different types of photography. I really like sports. I'm really good at sports. That was just, like, my favorite stuff. Looking back at that time, I wish I would have gone a lot harder documenting sort of the culture in, like, rural Alabama middle school football. Because when I think back, like, it's not the action, man. It's, like, the dad in the concession line in overalls, legitimately without a shirt under the overalls. Like, it was like a cartoon. It's like, if you tell that story, like, oh, you're making it up, that's like a bad cliche, but it's like, it was real, man. I saw it.
That sounds like a hell of an off-season project. Just
get back out,
go
there,
find small town Alabama, and, you know, document that culture, that sports culture. Maybe not football,
because yeah,
off-season ain't your off-season either. But
yeah, I find myself thinking more about that kind of stuff these days, especially coming back around thinking about atmosphere, setting, place. That's something I think a lot about in my work right now. And yeah, man, if I could have that time over again, I definitely would have focused on some of that stuff a lot more.
I think that's something, I mean, looking at your work, like, I really see that sense of atmosphere and place. Like, you know, I've pulled up your website, your portfolio and stuff. And I mean, the stuff that you do off the field is, you know, to me, 10 times as interesting as what you do on the field. And it's not because your stuff on the field isn't great. It is. It's just like, it's so unique and it's so creative. And I mean, how do you go about setting those moments and setting those feelings up and the atmosphere? Because it, you know, it's sometimes you got to balance that, you know, setting it up and making, you know, making it a posed thing versus trying to capture, you know, just what it's feeling in the moment as you're walking by it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I think to answer your question, it's a lot of looking. I feel like that's what I'm always doing. I'm just like looking, watching, thinking, looking, watching, thinking. And sometimes, you know, people like, oh, Zach's not doing anything right now, I'm going to go talk to him. And that's tough. Cause like when you see me doing that, like, I'm just thinking about everything that I'm seeing, looking for the light, looking for the color, looking for the backgrounds. Sometimes you find this spot and you're like, I'm going to camp out right here and try to make the picture that's in my head in this spot. Sometimes it's kind of like run and gun and you get lucky and it worked out. Or I try very hard. I'm guilty of this, and it's happened in the past. I'm trying hard to move away from it. Sometimes you get something in your head and you get so obsessed with it that you just miss everything else. Like, oh, I have to get this. in the meantime, the opportunity cost is like, you know, you're getting destroyed by the opportunity cost of your brilliant idea that maybe will or will not work out.
Yeah. You get one frame that you've waited 30 minutes for and you've missed, you know, maybe 15 other frames that aren't quite as good, but
been there, done
sometimes
that.
You need those 15 frames.
Yeah.
Right?
Been there, done that, man. I was thinking, you know, talking about setting and stuff, I was thinking about this morning actually, cause we're going to Cleveland next week and we went to Cleveland last year too. It was a rainy game and that was like an all timer. I felt like that day in Cleveland last year stands out to me as one of my favorites in a long time. Just because
there's nothing like shooting in weather, man.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, right. Yes. I remember I'll tell a quick little story about my time in Kansas City. I had a day after the season, almost around the time my internship was done, that I didn't have a lot going on. And the Chiefs at the time had this really cool former PR executive that had become the team historian. And he was in charge of all the historic artifacts for the Chiefs. And they
Bob Moore.
Yeah, Bob Moore, yeah. And he had them stored in, it's called the Caves. There's like a storage facility in Kansas City that's sort of like an underground cave complex, basically. So I went to this wild, weird place to go talk to Bob and showed me all the cool stuff, had a blast. And I remember asking him, you know, if you were me, if you were a photographer, what picture would you be hoping to get? What picture would you be trying to get? And that's pretty much what he told me. He's like, man, you better hope for bad weather. You better hope for mud. Snow, rain, that's the stuff that's going to live forever. That always really stuck out in my head because this guy, I mean, if anybody knows what he's talking about, it's him. He's been around the block a couple of times.
You know, I'm very fortunate that I, for some reason in my life, I've gotten to be friends with some very talented photographers. One of my other favorite photographers is a photographer. She's a photographer for the Associated Press. She does sports, but she also does everything else the Associated Press does, right? She was nominated for a Pulitzer last year. And what I think is crazy is your style and her style are very similar in the sense of you both just seem to know how to make people comfortable around the camera and ignore the camera, right? There's a lot of that in your work. You know, you can see, you know, back when JJ Watt was on the team, there's a lot of that. A lot of JJ seemed to be very, very comfortable around your camera. And almost like you weren't there. How do you work that? How do you work that relationship with the players, with people? Because as somebody who's been around players with a video camera, you stick out like a sore thumb. It's like, hey, there's the person with the video camera. I'm sure Garrett and Justin can agree, you know, making yourself blend in with a camera and professional equipment can be tough, but you seem to get those natural moments. How do you make those players comfortable?
Yeah, I think it's a certain kind of guy that's comfortable with it. I think there's a certain kind of player that may not prefer my approach. But that's a really apt observation, Brock. I think it's right. It's sort of my demeanor. It's kind of my personality. I don't want to be a part of the scene. I don't want to draw attention to myself. And I think people can feel that energy. And I think there's a certain kind of player that I photograph a lot, like JJ. You know, they kind of know my deal. I get to know them a little bit, and then they start to see the work, and they start to understand in these moments, these are what the pictures end up looking like. And everybody just kind of plays their role, and they understand, like, this is how Zach shoots. I'm just going to do my thing. Because that's another thing. Like, these guys are trying to work, right? Like, when I'm sticking the camera in their face, I really don't want to be a factor in their day. You know, I want to make them look cool. I feel like that's my job is to make all these guys look cool and make the Texans look cool. But I don't want them to be thinking about me. I want them to be thinking about football. I want them to be thinking about what they have to do on the field. So I very, very rarely will I ask someone to give me something. Hey, do this. Hey, give me one of these. You know, that especially on game day, like that's just super, super rare. So I think the pictures that are successful are of the people that understand the way that I'm working and what I'm about and the way I'm trying to do it, and vice versa. Somebody that I feel comfortable with, they're giving me sort of the energy that, hey, it's okay, man, come on over here, you're not bugging me. Because if I feel like I'm bugging somebody, like that's like my worst nightmare. That's like, I hate that. And it took me a long time to even get like comfortable. I remember early on, like if there was like a speaker at a public event or whatever, and I had to photograph them at the public event, and I just felt those eyes on me because I have the camera. Like, maybe you have to walk up front or something. I really hated that. It took me a long time to get over that. So I really want to be fly on the wall in the background, not, you know, sometimes you have to put on the photo show, like that's the job, but if given the choice, I would prefer not to put on the photo show.
I mean, how do you balance the use of focal length in that, right? Because, you know, sometimes there's a great opportunity to be right up in someone's face with a 35 or, you know, something like that, or, you know, and even an 18, get something like really cool and tight. But then, you know, sometimes the best moments you capture, you're sitting back, you know, 50 yards away with a 200 and you just, you know, capture something special. How do you balance focal length in your work doing what you do?
Yeah, that's another, you guys are asking awesome questions. Focal length for me in sports and football, I think a lot of people that do what I do would agree, longer focal length makes your life easier because everything is always so messy and you're just trying to get that separation between the subject and the background. So a longer focal length makes your life a little easier. But I think I've fallen into a bad habit in the past sometimes of shooting long too often and wishing I had more context. So if there's an opportunity to have more context that doesn't distract or it's not bad composition, you know, I generally these days I'm trying to think like, man, if I can get wider, I'm trying to, because especially when you go back and look at older stuff, I find myself wishing I had more context. Like, oh man, I want to see more Arrowhead. Oh man, I want to see more of US Bank Stadium. So I'm trying to think in terms of like that. But I am very like drawn to faces. I'm very drawn to like details, equipment, texture. And longer focal length is great for a lot of that stuff. So yeah, it's a balance. It's tough, man. I feel like I'm always fighting with those two things.
You said a key word there in texture. And when I look at your photos, you know, there's three main things I see that you incorporate very well. That's texture, exposure, and framing, right? You're not afraid to crop an image, you know, or to, you know, maybe give a different perspective on texture. What goes on and how does your mind's eye work? You get a photo. Are you already thinking about the crop? Are you already thinking about the edit process? What's that like?
Yeah, sometimes I am thinking about the final output when I shoot some of that stuff, for sure. When I started playing around with Instagram stories and not thinking about it as some sort of like precious final masterpiece and just sort of view it as something to have fun with, it allowed me to make some of these texture pictures that I like. I like to make those pictures. I think it's fun. I think there's so much of it on game day. Just like the infrastructure of like inside the stadium, stuff that, you know, when I'm trying to make a good picture might be ugly and like, oh, I have to avoid that. But it's everywhere all the time. So I'm like, maybe I embrace this and use this because that's the place that I'm in, right? Like, this is real. I'm trying to keep it real. I'm trying to give people the best possible version of what's happening, but I'm also trying to keep it real. So maybe embracing sort of this stuff that's like ugly, quote unquote ugly, maybe let's shoot that and let's use it in the Instagram story. So yeah, it kind of started getting intentional and thoughtful, thinking about the final usage for sure. But sometimes you're just going and you're not even thinking, you know, my game day goes by so fast. I have found that it is sort of bad to think too much. I've fallen into that trap before. Yesterday, I was just going. First regular season game, shot way too much. So I probably need to think a little bit more next Sunday because overshot that sucker.
I think that's such a cool distinction between kind of photography and video, because I'm looking, you know, at an image on your website now and it's in the tunnel. And it's you shooting up on a player and behind him up on the ceiling, you just see pipes, you just see the wire runs and everything like that. And like, that is ugly stuff. And on video, I feel like that doesn't necessarily play as texture, right? Like, it's just like crap when you're seeing frames of it in motion, but when it's still like that as a photographer, like, you can take something like that and the lines of it, just because it's frozen in a moment, like the lines and the texture just really pop on photo in a way that doesn't in video. And that's so cool to think about. I never really thought about it in that way, and just, you know, because I'm so used to video, but like looking at your website, looking at the images like that through some of the tunnels where, you know, some of that is ugly space that you've used in a really, really cool way to, you know, see texture and see feel and a little bit of grit to it. Like, I love that. I think that's so cool. And I'm totally going to steal that at some point.
You're welcome to it, sir. I'm hardly the first. I'm glad that you're an appreciator of that. I think those tunnels present some really unique opportunities on game day. And I think it tells the story that we want to tell about ourselves. You know, I think a lot of those moments are sort of like read as focus, read as intensity. I think any time that I can get obsessed with detail and sort of just like really zoom in, you know, and especially like what you're doing, like people that do stop and look instead of just like tap, 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 next. And if you are interested and you stop, I think the power of a good picture that's made well, it just like elevates the subject matter, right? Like in the moment you might be like, this isn't anything. But by the time you take it, you get it on your computer, you mess with it a little bit, and you present it, I'm always surprised when I do get positive feedback. And I think back in the moment, like, I almost didn't take that picture, but people are responding to this. I need to remember that. And don't think too hard about this. Like, in the moment, I might be wrong. So I need to let it rip.
One thing you mentioned there is story. You know, you talked about, you know, we're trying to tell the story of our organization. For you as a photographer, for a team, how much are you balancing just trying to take, like, you know, one really good image and it's not about story. It's just about, like, this is going to look really cool versus, you know, putting together photo sets and putting together things that maybe speak to broader themes for your organization.
That's another awesome question, man. I think for me personally, I lean more on the edge of just make it look cool. I wish there just aren't as many opportunities for like a solid, cohesive photo story, like photo documentary essay. I'm interested in that stuff. But some of my job is very utilitarian. I'm building this library, this database. Like I've sort of given myself a Google PhD in digital asset management, and my sort of library building is something that's in the back of my head. So some of it's just coverage. Like I need a full-length vertical of this dude. I need, you know, so I'm like running through that checklist in my head and just make it look cool. But sometimes by just making it look cool, and I get it on the computer and I sort of realize like, oh man, there is enough here to make, you know, if I edit this down in an interesting, tight way, you know, if you don't know I tell my intern, like when we present a final body of work, if you don't know the final score, I want you to think the Texans won. That's something I think about a lot. And I think we do that a lot of times. Like I think we really, it's taken a while to get there, but that's something I feel proud of, because when you just like, just like get really obsessed with these details at game day, I think fans love it. Like my folks went to Kansas State, right? So I follow Kansas State social media pretty closely. They do a great job of like posting their fans and their tailgates on game day. Like I'm not gonna get to go out to Manhattan for a tailgate anytime soon. So as a fan, I'm just like, oh my God, I love this. This is great. I love seeing what everybody's up to out there. And so sometimes it's good to put yourself in that fan mindset, help guide your coverage, because you realize the people that care the most about this, they do care about all these little details, man. They want to see it.
I want to talk about your approach to coverage on game day, because I think the inkling is, especially coming from a video world, be down low and be close as possible, right? And be a front of the ball and all this, the basics of how you cover a game. But some of my favorite stuff of yours is when you're, you know, up in the 300s section, you know, and shooting down and getting your framing there. How do you approach your angles on any given game day?
Yeah, a lot of it has to do with just like planning and logistics. Put yourself in a position where if you miss a big play, it's not the end of the world. Have enough people on your team that somebody else is getting like the basic coverage shot, and you have an opportunity to use the wrong lens in the wrong spot. you know, that's when some interesting, neat things can happen. That's harder for me to do on road games because it's usually just me and one or two other shooters. But on home games, I have plenty of guys. So if I want to mosey around, if I want to explore, if I want to get behind the ball, get low, get high, there's a lot more opportunity to do that. So I think, you know, everybody has different assignments on game day, you know, depending on what you're doing. If you're working for the Houston Chronicle, if you're working for the Texans, if you're shooting for the you know, like everybody's assignment is different on game day. And I think that's okay. That's fine. So it's good to learn the rules of the right way to do it. But then you get to a certain point that's it's like play around with it a little bit. Mess around.
I want to jump in because you mentioned that you're a drummer. I'm not going to ask.
I was in a former life.
The 1 and 3 and 2 and 4 question. I want to talk about rhythm and okay. how that plays a role in your game day shoots or however you know, in a typical shoot. How does a rhythm that you get in, or is there a way that you get into a rhythm that sets you up for success on a game day?
Yeah, that's I've never thought about it in quite that way with rhythm, but that's totally exactly what it is. And when I think about that for my job and what I've done in the past, like sometimes it can be a good thing and a bad thing. Sometimes you get in this groove and you're missing the shot because you're like so obsessed, like do this and do this and do this and do this. When in reality, you should pause, think, look around, turn around, switch cameras. You know, I think in the past, it's like, oh man, I've taken the same shot over and over again. Like I really should just like use a 24 in this spot instead. Why don't I ever do that? And you're just not in that rhythm. But like when you are in the groove, I think it's when you stop thinking and you just go, I think that can be so valuable. A lot of times like just shooting game action, I've gotten better at staying on the play. I used to pull off the play too early. Just stay with it, stay with it. Another beat, another beat, another beat until you're just like absolutely sure, like, okay, it's over. I do a lot of like wirelessly transferring out like from my camera. So a lot of times like game action, that's like the next order of operations is like just find those two selects from that good play and get those sent to web and social. Like TV timeouts. Got to get in the habit of looking behind you, shooting those fans. Our new marketing campaign is called That Football Feeling. Really celebrates fans, really celebrates like Houston, Texas football. So getting in that groove of like, always look behind you, always look behind you, always look behind you. I think that can be, you know, when you look at your game take and you're like, oh man, I didn't get enough fans. Like that's a bad feeling, you know? So getting in that good, those good healthy habits of like looking around you are really good.
No, it's fantastic advice. I love that. That's one of my favorite things. I mean, and it helps when you have more coverage, right? When you have like,
oh my gosh,
multiple photographers, yes. multiple, yes. like going to, for me, going to the Big Ten basketball tournament, going to the Big Ten football championship where we have 7-8 shooters, something like that for us covering everything. Like all of a sudden my mind turns from like, how can I capture this play to how can I capture the environment? Because I know yes. someone's going to get it.
Yes.
And I don't fear turning around. And I mean, some of my favorite shots that I get every year at those two events are just the dumbest things that happen in the stands. I just love Absolutely. Capturing fans looking stupid.
Yes.
And I mean that lovingly, like yeah. stupid in a like excited, you know, fan way, just, you know, up or down or whatever. Like that tells a story as much as what's happening on the field sometimes.
Absolutely, man. And that's like the fun stuff. That's the stuff that has great shelf life too, right? Like that tells the story of the team and the conference and the event for a long, long time. If you get too obsessed with like individual players, it's like, well, guys come and go, you know, sometimes they end up being sort of a stalwart of the program or the team. And sometimes it's, you know, sometimes it doesn't end awesome. And that's, you know, it's like, man, I just spent a lot of resources making pictures that like we can't use anymore. So that's, you know, if you, you know, cast that wider net, you know, you're doing everybody a favor.
How do you, you talked a little bit about having a little bit of a team there with you. I mean, what do you have for a team in photography there for the Texans that you're managing?
Yeah, it's grown. This is my fourth season being here, and it's grown every year, which is a great feeling. And the reason it has grown, it's not me saying, like, I want more people. It's like it's grown because it's had to. The demand for the product is growing. So that's great. Great time to be a photographer. Everybody wants more and more pictures. I'm happy to accommodate them. If I can help get a freelance photographer paid, I feel really good about that, man. Like, I take some pride in that. Like, I don't know. It just feels really good. It feels good to give somebody an opportunity. It feels good to get somebody paid for doing a good job. It's awesome. So we've got 11 people on my game day team now, and I just had a meeting this morning. It's like, we need to get another guy to shoot sponsorship stuff. Like, it's more than one man can handle. We need another sponsorship photographer. So that's good. I think when you start scaling it the way that it's happened, I'm dealing with some very specific, like, workflow issues regarding the increased scale. But I really like working on that stuff. I think it's really fun. It makes me feel like I'm problem solving. It makes me feel like I'm kind of making little mini discoveries on the best way to do this. And I love my group. I love, like, working in the photo workroom with them after the game and talking about pictures. I love talking shop. So I like that I've got this little group, because I feel like I'm on photography island all the time. So game days, you know, I get to be with my people. It's fun.
I love that we've been this far into the podcast. We've talked about, you know, framing and making art and making these photos, and we haven't said a single word about gear or what you use. And this is coming from somebody who's a gearhead. I'm a huge gearhead, right? But it goes to show it really doesn't matter, right? That it's just a tool, right? But now we're going to get into it. The gear, what's your game day setup, body, lens, how many bodies are you carrying, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I have two Canon 1DX Mark III bodies. I've got one Canon 1DX Mark II, one Mark II body. And those are the three that I use the most on game day. I have a 5D Mark IV that gets a lot of use during the week for other events. I recently bought a Canon R to just shoot press conferences because it doesn't make any noises.
Smart.
Yeah. So that honestly, I got it just for press conferences. Like, I didn't get the big dog R. I just got one of the cheaper ones. But it does what I needed to for press conferences. And then for lenses on game day, I use my 24 a lot. It's 1.4. I use my 35 a lot. I really love my 85. I use that quite a bit. I have to, like, make myself not use it. And then when the game starts, I'll use the 70 to 200 and probably like a 24 or a 17 to 40, for the rare occasion. Like, I don't use the 17 to 40 during game action hardly ever, but, like, if that celebration comes right at you or something, it's good to be able to grab that. And then I use 400 for indoor games, but if there's, like, an outdoor game, you know, a little brighter, I really like the 600. I use the 600 a lot. I really like it. I love it for practice. I love it for any time I get a chance to use a 600. I love it. And I love it when I can use it when I'm part of a bigger team. You know, it's probably a lower batting average with the 600, but maybe more home runs. It makes a certain kind of picture that I think's really interesting. There's a game action picture that's always in my head, sort of this, like, Renaissance painting type game action picture where it's just, like, bodies in motion from all different angles. And that's what I always want to get. You know, I never quite get there, but I feel like if any lens is ever going to get that picture, maybe it's the 600. Yeah. So that's the gear that I'm using. I'm not super, I mean, I like to tease my Sony friends, but I really don't have a problem with Sony at all. I've seen some, like, unbelievable Sony pictures. I may end up using Sony someday. I don't think I'm quite there yet. I'm sure, but yeah, like, I'm probably going to end up using a mirrorless camera. I may end up using a Sony camera. I don't ever want to be the first adopter for anything. Like, I'm completely content to let everybody else say they were first and make their YouTube tutorials and reviews, and I'll watch them and I'll make my assessment. And so, yeah, but I don't ever want to think like, this is the way I've always done it, this is what I've always used, the end. I don't want to be that guy.
I love the way you talk about that as a Renaissance painting, like very clearly an art school guy, you know, as you're.
Oh my gosh. I learned a lot of paintings at one point in my life. Too many. Most of that info is gone now.
I mean, you talked even before going to art school that you had done a lot of sports. I mean, when did you decide that sports is the realm that you wanted to go into? And I mean, being at art school, is sports a path that you find a lot among your colleagues there at art school?
No, I don't know if anybody, I'm sure there's somebody that has gone to SCAD before or after that has gone into sports photography, but that I would say that's pretty unusual. I just came back around to it because I just sort of realized, like, this is what I like and this is what I'm good at and this is what I want to be around. And, you know, talking about the camera being a passport, just, you know, it puts me, I want to be on the sideline. It's a ticket to be at the wrestling show. It's a ticket to be at the football game. You know, people are like, oh, you have a camera? Sure, right this way. So, I mean, it's like crazy. It's totally crazy. But I love that. And I tried some other stuff. You know, I had some fun with some of the fine arts stuff. And I didn't shoot any sports during my time at SCAD. I was doing all kinds of different stuff, playing with that large format camera, shooting buildings, playing with a lot of instant film, doing a lot of scanning, did all kinds of stuff. But yeah, I love
the way that you talked about access, you know, kind of being like such a driver behind, you know, loving what you do. Like, I mean, you even talked about it when you were in Stillwater, how it just allowed you into places you wouldn't have been otherwise. And I think that's a really cool thing that a lot of people can identify with in this industry. Like, there's something that just having that all access pass, man, like it, I don't know that it's an ego shot, but like it kind of can be. And it also just like to be included and to be able to get into spaces not everyone can get into, like as a creative, that's just cool as hell.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree. It's magical. It's magical. You know, it gives you, I don't know. It's like, I don't know. If you ever play video games, like I'm a big, big Zelda guy. So you got your main quests, got your side quests, and the camera gives you both. The camera's like my main quest and my side quest. Band comes to town, send them that cold email, like, hey, wouldn't it be cool to shoot these guys? Let's see what happens. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, which is fine. You know, it's like a shot in the dark. But like that, the camera opening up the side quests is like unreal. It's crazy. Like, what do you mean?
That's my favorite analogy I think I have ever heard, talking about like freelance work and like side work. Yeah. Is Zelda and main quests and side quests, man. And video games. That's beautiful.
Thank you. I'm glad that you appreciate it. I'm a big Zelda guy. So,
my God, Zach, I'm having a blast.
I am too. No, this you guys are asking like unbelievable questions. You're like
stretching my mind a little bit. Is like, and I know I feel this way, I don't want to speak for Garrett or Justin, but like I was never a great photographer, but I could be a passable videographer, right? You know, so like I'm always like, I obviously know the basics of composition, lighting, exposure, all that stuff, right? But I look at really good photographers and I'm like, oh well, I can't do that, right? So for me it's like, yeah, I know what questions to ask, but I cannot do what you do, but I have a basic understanding at least.
Well, you guys clearly understand what's going on, and I think, you know, thinking about your guys's, you know, visual backgrounds, all your questions are based on assessing the things that you're looking at, right? Like you're looking at my work and you're sort of parsing out what you're seeing, and for somebody like me, for you guys to look at my work and ask me questions that are like spot on, it makes me feel very seen, and it's an unbelievable feeling to have people understand what you're doing, because I think that is a lot of my work. It's me trying, it's the medium that I have chosen to try to tell the world what I'm about, or tell people what I'm about. So it feels very good to have people understand it. So it's,
I think the general public gets it. They just don't know how to frame it right. Like a photo can make them feel a certain way, right? But they don't know why. You know, you're really good at using negative space, you know, in a lot of photos, right? To make, like, I'm looking at this picture of Deshaun with in Indianapolis with Lucas Oil behind him, and he's the bottom fifth of the frame, if even that, bottom sixth, right? But like that, somebody can say like, oh, that feels enormous, right? But like we can look at it and say, oh, that's a really good use of negative space there, right? Like the subject is a subject, but the subject is really the surrounding around the subject, right? So it can make somebody feel a certain way, and you can totally win there, right? But then somebody who has a little bit more for an eye for it can say like, oh yeah, that's great negative space, and that's, you know, unique frame that people may not have thought of. And I think that's why I like a lot of your work. You don't, I think a lot of young photographers, it's me speaking out of my ass because I'm not a photographer, but they can get locked into a look and a framing, right? They can get locked into like negative space, right, in a way that's detrimental, right? Or they can get locked into, you know, low wide angle, right, in a way that that's detrimental to them, right? Whereas I look at your stuff and I look at your cropping, you look at your framing, it's everything, right? And it and I think that's what attracts me to your work most, is the variety in it.
Thank you. Yeah, that's something I think about a lot when I'm putting a body of work together. I am all about visual variety. I preach visual variety to my interns, to my freelancers. That's what I want. That's what we should be doing. I've gotten a lot of inspiration for a long time from cinematography, from film. There's these things, I don't even know what exactly they're called, but like they're basically, there's people online that are really into making screen grab compilations from films, and they'll put them like in a grid. So like these cinema screen grab grids. And I have a folder of probably like 500 of those on my computer. Like I love tracking those down. And like I even have them like organized according to movie. Like, you know, some films have, people have made like multiple different versions. And when you organize them in that way, you're like, holy cow, this guy made a different version of this movie that I like from screen grabs. Like you would never have any idea that these are from the same film. And I think that's the power of editing, and that's sort of the magic of what you do and what I do. We can choose what people see and don't see, and oh my God, you're the best photographer. It's like, okay, well, you didn't see the 17,000 frames from Sunday that I just deleted. And
one of my favorite stories about that is I worked with a photographer, videographer, who he shot all the scenics for Monday Night Football. He went on the road with them, and his job like was just go out the day before, capture
the scene, really fun.
Capture the feel, atmosphere, all that stuff. Yeah. And it was right at the start of shooting onto memory cards. You know, before that it was all tape and everything. And he would, the directors, the producers, the, you know, tape ops, et cetera, didn't really understand the digital side of things yet. He would go out and shoot, you know, hundreds of frames. And before he came back in, he would just delete anything that sucked off of his memory card and then hand it over to the, you know, the people who were ingesting it. And they just thought he was the greatest scenic shooter of all time because he never came back with a bad frame. Shot. He just, man, you only That's shot awesome. 17 things, but they're all fantastic. And it's, yeah, he awesome. Didn't tell him for a full year that he was going through and self-editing before he handed him back in.
I can't blame a guy for doing that. I totally understand that inclination. I love that story. That's great. What a fun job, too. That's like a dream job.
Oh, man. Like shooting ENG stuff for those, shooting the scenic, shooting, you know, just being able to capture the scene rather than having to capture the action. There's nothing like that. I've been fortunate to have that role a couple of times, not on Monday Night Football, but, you know, on other things, on College World Series, other events. And it's, God, it's just the greatest feeling in the world to capture, to be given that freedom to capture scene rather than action, right?
Yeah. And I think it behooves these, you know, broadcasters and outlets and whatever to do that kind of stuff, because I think that stuff really attracts casual fans. I think it's the same reason you see so many like human interest items. It's not about just, you know, the stuff between the lines. Like you got to give people more sort of substrate to grab onto, you know, give them some place, give them a little story. That's why they do all this extra work. And so that's good when places recognize, like, oh man, we got to go hard with this B-roll and make it cool. That makes me happy.
Well, I think it makes sense, you know, especially in the sports space, and, you know, maybe less for you because you guys are trying to sell tickets and get people in the door and all that. But like, you know, for us as a TV network, like, we want people on the couch. We want butts, you know, in their homes watching TV and you watching TV. You're missing that atmosphere. You're missing that. So any way that we can present that, you know, to the viewer, they're much more likely to stick around. And I think sports are such a great, you know, we have such a good opportunity in sports because there is so much atmosphere. There is so much, and especially for us in college sports.
Oh my God.
There's just so much pageantry. Yeah. And like, that's what makes it fun. And if you're not at the game, you miss that. So hopefully we can relay that. And for you, you know, putting out your images after the game or stuff, you want people to remember that feeling that they had either in the stands or watching the game on TV.
Preach, brother. Yeah, it's in some ways you guys are our competition, right? Like, we're trying to make it so get off the couch. And I got to say, at this point in my life,
I want to stay on the couch. Never leave your home.
I want to stay on the couch. Kitchen's right there. Bathroom's right there. This is awesome. I love my TV. Love my couch. Speaking of like the pageantry of college football, man, like, I get to shoot a couple of college games here at NRG every year. The Texans, they book a couple of college games. And I really love it for two reasons. Like, number one, I just have less on my to-do list. So like, I can just kind of let it rip and have fun with it. But there's every time I walk away from those games, I'm like, oh my God, there was so much to shoot. There's just so much to shoot. And it's also interesting. I love the passion that goes into every single little detail. I remember like one of the Baylor twirlers or whatever, they were outside of the stadium like doing their thing or whatever. And even like the little like special barrette decoration thing that was in their hair, it was just like insanely elaborate. Like, some buddy at Baylor loves the twirling department so much that they're like, I have to like give them the most unbelievable hair decoration known to man. And it's like that just across the board, like every single little thing. It's awesome,
man. That's so cool. I love that. I mean, photography was my gateway into video, really. Like, I never really had any desire to do video until I was into college already, but I took a lot of high school photography classes, and okay, like, that's where I learned composition. That's how I learned, you know, exposure, contrast, like all those things that pay off for me in video now. And it's just, it's so cool to see, you know, there's such an overlap between the two. And, you know, like I said, it was my gateway into understanding all of the basic things that you needed to know for video. And, you know, I mean, have you ever experimented with video stuff, or, you know, are you a frames guy?
Oh, man, a little bit here and there. I really wanted to like be a like film director. Like, that was kind of like one of my earliest visual art sort of ambitions. And my film studies classes, honestly, at Oklahoma State are kind of what gave me the cojones to transfer. If I hadn't taken those classes, I don't know if I would have ever gone to art school. I had an awesome summer school class that I still remember. It was like analysis of pseudo-documentary film studies class. So Spinal Tap, Best in Show, bunch of other like weird stuff that you've never seen. I was obsessed with that class. I mean, that was like, I need to do this. I want to do this. But just having no clue where to even start. But who knows, man, maybe in a different life, I would have been somebody that had done something like that. I did made like an extra credit assignment for that pseudo documentary class. It was like a hoax video, like a ghost sighting hoax video. Like most geniuses, you know, they're underappreciated in their time.
Yeah.
You know, this wasn't appreciated.
I mean, my implication was not that your current job is, you know, a gateway to video for you as well. I was just, you know, I see a lot of photographers out there that, you know, even at doing stuff at your level that, you know, play around with video a little bit, yeah, that do, you know, just an ultra, either ultra high frame rate,
yeah,
you know, series of photos that kind of get, you know, GIFed, or GIFed, yeah, if you will. I think if you say GIF, I hate you, personally, yep, but
at least we're on the same page there.
I will allow it. I accept it as an alternate pronunciation, but it's definitely not the right one.
The G stands for graphic, not giraffical.
Yes. Thank you. Thank
Sorry,
you.
Go on.
I don't care that the founder said it that way. I don't care about him. Anyway, that's a tangent. But all that to say, just that, you know, there is such opportunity in the way that like photo and video have overlapped. I mean, between equipment, between,
yeah,
all of it, there's just such opportunity to really bounce back and forth, you know, within the industries. And obviously you have to practice at it and do it at a high level. Yeah. But
I think that's what's kept me away from it. Is like, yeah, needing to do it at a high level and being sort of ashamed, yeah, for an amateur attempt, you know, just being like, oh, I mean, it's cool for me, but not cool for the rest of the world. But no, I think convergence is happening. It's very real. I think maybe people that are doing what I do, we probably all need to pay more attention to bolstering maybe our video skill set a little bit.
Yeah, Brace Hemmelgarn, the Twins, yeah, Minnesota Twins photographer. I knew him when I worked at the University of Minnesota. He would freelance on game days for the photo team. And so I followed him for a long time. And I've just kind of seen him start to dabble a little bit in some of that. So I was curious if that's something you're seeing in the industry, if that's something you're doing, or just where that was. I didn't know how common that was, or if it was just one person that I happened to follow.
I think it's getting more and more common all the time, and I think it's going to keep going in that direction, especially because of the equipment. I mean, these mirrorless cameras, when you can shoot 30 frames per second, it's like, you're already shooting video. Just put a video thing together. I don't know. If you got the skills to pay the bills, I say go for it. It also has to do with your role too, right? Like, what are people looking to you for? Is that value added, or are you just like giving yourself more work for more work's sake? So understanding the assignment. But that's, I mean, people like Brace that can play around with that, and I'm sure his bosses are loving it. I think that's awesome. I think it's a very smart move on his part. I would encourage anybody listening to this to probably, you know, do both if you can.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker, and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.